And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid. I am the White Ranger, Michael, after having to get text message confirmation during the last episode from Blue Ranger Brian.
Hey, everybody, what's going on?
And I mean, better than being colorless, rangerless, powerless, lessless.
I mean, yeah, right?
It could have been worse. I could have been Zordon.
Fact.
And we're joined also by the Red Ranger, Sasha.
I hope you know my name. The one, the only, the wonderful, Sasha Kaplan.
And we got the Black Ranger, Mr. Ben Taylor.
It's me, your boy Ben Taylor, a.k.a. the man who shot Liberty Valance.
Who shot who? I'm sorry?
You don't know, man, I should stop referencing movies from the 60s. The man who shot Liberty Valance is a man from is a movie from like 1962.
I've honestly never heard of it. Any good? No. Okay.
And now I feel old.
So with that, we're doing the Ninja Encounter episodes today, where Ben gets very happy. Ben's got that smile and the thumbs up already. So yeah, let's hop right on into it. It's everyone's favorite segment in my mind, the quick run through of Ninja Encounter, aka
the debut of Adam Park, the greatest of all time.
And we begin with part one. As while we're at the park, the Rangers are spending a Saturday relaxing. We're now introduced to three new individuals. We learn about a ninja competition, and Zed likes the idea of the competition because of who the competitors are. A scuffle at the park, it causes a stroller to go rolling down the hill. The three new faces give chase. Tommy, Kim, and Billy part ways with Trini, Zach, and Jason, and then they notice the stroller. They then join in the chase as well. Some construction guys get out of the way. Why? Bulk and Skull even join the chase. Eventually, Kim and the new girl stop the stroller. Tommy, Kim, and Billy introduce themselves, and we now learn the three new individuals are Rocky, Adam, and Aisha. Everyone parts ways. And then it's ninja competition time, and Stone Canyon wins. And it was Rocky, Adam, and Aisha the whole time. Goldar informs Zed that his chosen ones lost, and they opt to kidnap Rocky, Adam, and Aisha instead. Goldar and the putties attack. Kim, Tommy, and Billy fight off the putties, but Rocky, Adam, and Aisha are taken by Goldar. Even Mr. Anderson is kidnapped. Bulk and Skull freak out and check on Jacob, Mr. Anderson's son. They decide to take care of Jacob. At the command center, Zordon briefs the team. He informs them that Jacob is safe, but the others are in danger of being brought to the dark side. At the dark dimension, Goldar lectures Rocky, Adam, and Aisha that they've been chosen by Zed to be his evil doers. Poor Jacob. He doesn't know what to take of this whole situation with Bulk and Skull. Or what's going on with his father at that part. Which then leads us to part two. At the command center, Zordon is leaning hard on Billy, and Aisha is trying to pick the lock. Zed creates a toxic flower monster, and Zordon briefs the Rangers. Tommy, Kim, and Billy go to help Rocky, Adam, and Aisha. Jason, Trini, and Zach go jetting to fight the Terror Blossom. They find the monster and begin to attack, but the monster runs off. Zordon sends Tommy, Kim, and Billy to aid Trini, Jason, and Zach. They take on putties and a new monster. Zed makes the Hatchasaurus grow, and it's Thunder Megazord time. A battle ensues. The Rangers think they have it defeated, but with the help of Zed, the Hatchasaurus comes back for more. Aisha picks the lock, and they break from their chains and engage the putties. Hatchasaurus is laying the smackdown on the Rangers at the moment time, while Goldar returns and recaptures the three. Goldar unveils the wooden snake that will in an hour take full form and bite Rocky, Adam, and Aisha to inject evil into them. Meanwhile, the Rangers finally defeat Hatchasaurus. Zordon teleports everyone back to the command center. They split up and morph back into action. The Terror Blossom freezes Zach, Jason, and Trini upon arrival, and then Tommy, Billy, and Kim return to Zed's dimension to save the others. The wooden snake transforms into a real one. Zordon informs Tommy, Billy, and Kim of Zack, Jason, and Trini's situation. They just can't save these people to help themselves. They go to help the other Rangers. They get Zack, Jason, and Trini to the command center to end part two, which then brings us to part three. At the command center, they're trying to unfreeze Trini, Zack, and Jason. Meanwhile, Zed's in a good mood. Mr. Anderson trying to keep spirits up with Adam, Aisha, and Rocky. Bulk and Skull still taking care of Jacob. Bulk changing Jacob's diaper is a journey nonetheless. Billy is unable to unfreeze Trini, Jason, and Zack. The team gets back to action. Zed makes the Terror Blossom grow and Zord time. Zordon realizes time is of the essence and says Tommy, Trini, Kim, and Billy to save Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, leaving Zack and Jason with the Terror Blossom. Billy and Trini go inside to stop the snake and save Rocky, Adam, and Aisha. Trini teleports with Mr. Anderson to get him back to Jacob. Adam, Rocky, and Aisha join the fight. Billy struggling with the snake. Zed is upset in their failures with the Terror Blossom and the warriors being freed. Tommy chucks the snake and Kim blasts the snake. They take Billy's helmet off to make sure he's okay. They do this in front of Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, forcing Tommy and Kim to reveal themselves as well. Back at the park, Mr. Anderson is reunited with Jacob. Rocky, Adam, and Aisha are at the command center to meet Zordon. Zordon has them take an oath to protect the identity of the Rangers, and that is how we end Ninja Encounter three-parter. I'm going to take a drink. So if somebody wants to bring up a note real quick while I take a drink, go for it.
Where do you start with this episode?
Well, the fact that it shouldn't have been a three-parter. Let's start with that.
Oh my God.
I disagree. This is one of the better paced Power Rangers stories that they've ever told. The problem is the contents of the story aren't very good.
Okay, fair.
The actual pacing of the story is very well done. The content of the story is what lets it down. It's too much, like, it's two episodes of content spread across three episodes, but it is very well paced for a three episode story.
I guess it's just, it's still. So let's start. I guess, can we start with the fact that the episode opens with all of them on a picnic and then three Rangers, who it's very clearly not the Rangers we've been following all along. Like, it's very clearly body doubles, right? And, like, realistically speaking, if Jason, Trini, and Zack, who, like, were never super close to be, like, by themselves constantly, are leaving the rest of the team, right? And they hear somebody screaming, they would have turned around and also followed the baby carriage, no?
That's one of the first things I wrote down, aside from the fact that one of the first things I wrote was, how do they get a TV out working in the park? But then aside from that, it was like...
I can vouch for the fact of having been alive at that point, that there were TVs that would do that. Yeah. They would just had a battery life of about 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's like
enough to watch an episode of Power Rangers.
There you go, but not three. But yeah, like they're literally within earshot. Why didn't they go chase the baby carriage?
See, my first note is, why is Tommy wearing green?
That too. I have a note about that too, because it happens twice.
We'll get to that.
He hadn't thrown out his old clothes, I guess.
No, it's because they were putting them in the exact clothes that they were wearing in season one, because of all the footage of the six Rangers in the command center is recycled from season one, because Zack has a flat top.
Yep.
Not the dreadlocks he has in season two.
Also, towards the end of the episode when they're morphing, Tommy doesn't call out the White Tiger Zord, or the White Tiger. He says Dragon Zord.
Anyway, Mike, I do believe this was a structure that you wanted to have.
Yes. I just needed to really drink. I just really needed the drink. So I appreciate you guys filling in for a moment. So yeah, first question I got for everyone. While this was the introduction of Adam, Rocky, and Aisha to the show, we are also introduced to Mr. Anderson, who does only appear in these three episodes. How do you feel about the importance of Mr. Anderson, not only to the episodes, but to Adam, Rocky, and Aisha?
I'm sorry. I wanted to do this all the way through your intro, and I have to do it. And it's that his name is Mr. Anderson. That's a wrestling in joke.
See, the one I was going with was Mr. Anderson from The Matrix.
Right, yeah.
That's what I was doing the whole time when I was writing these notes. I was like, and then they hang out with Mr. Anderson. So
I had Beavis and Butthead in mind.
To be honest, I forgot his name until just now.
Yeah. So what's your take on this, Sasha?
To be honestly, I think Jacob is a much more important character than Mr. Anderson, first of all. he's just another hostage, and he doesn't really contribute anything. And I'm sorry, Mike, in your recap, I do have one gripe. You were like, and Mr. Anderson is helping to keep morale up. He wasn't, though.
He does at several points be like, don't give up.
Yeah, he legitimately tries to keep the morale up.
That line could have gone to Aisha, or Rocky. It could have. But there's a point where she's like picking the lock and he's like, oh, don't agitate them. Don't do that. I'm like, yes, pick the lock.
Get out of there.
Like, what, are you just going to sit there hoping the Power Rangers show up? That's realistic.
Well, I mean, okay.
So I will say I was not impressed with Mr. Anderson, but I appreciated his commitment to his love for his son, but not his commitment to putting on the brakes on the stroller. Did that stroller have brakes, though?
It was the early 90s.
So here's the thing. My sister was born in 93, and they were twins. So, like, my parents had a stroller, and I very distinctly remember it having brakes. Like, so at that point he's just being neglectful, I think. But
I had a toy stroller that had brakes on it in the 90s.
Yeah,
I can have a kid stroller with brakes in Russia in the 1990s, then you spoiled Americans can have one too.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And again, I think they had them at that point, but you know, I don't think maybe not all strollers had them. So he might have gotten one of those, like, or it might have been a hand-me-down stroller from, like, I don't know, like when he, I don't know.
No, but it's possible. You're right. So, Brian, what is your take on Mr. Anderson?
All right. So here's what I wrote. I felt like he wasn't really all that important necessarily. He's important and for you know, being the kid's father and Bulk and Skull take care of that kid for the majority of these episodes. So removing him from that situation, you know, kind of allows Bulk and Skull to have their moment in these episodes. And he's also Rocky, Adam, and Aisha's teacher too, but I don't know. He's not that important. Like, I theorize maybe he was there as a reminder of what they have to lose if bitten by the snake and forced to join Zed's army. But, like, my question is, what were Zed and company going to do to Mr. Anderson in the first place once they were done with Rocky, Adam, and Aisha? Like, they're probably just going to, like, I don't know, if not off him, they were just going to throw him out in the desert and let him, you know, die, right? I don't know. Well, like,
because Mr. Anderson wasn't the original target. It was going to be and neither was Rocky, Aisha, and Adam. It was going to be the three jerks at the ninja tournament, but they lost.
Right. And I think that was just Goldar, like, grabbing onto him, right? Like, Goldar kind of, like, I think Mr. Anderson was actually trying to save them and got caught up in that. And then, like, they all went off together. So that's how he became part of that, you know, captured group.
Yeah.
So if anything, blame Goldar.
Ben?
So the question is, how important is the character that has never been mentioned before and will never be mentioned again?
Yes. Well, I mean, the importance of him, at least in this story, in the introduction of Adam, Aisha, and Rocky.
Is he Adam Park? No. Is he Rocky DeSantos?
No.
Is he Aisha Campbell?
No.
Then he doesn't matter in this story.
I think it's a pretty unanimous consensus here, Mike.
Now, that being said, his presence has a point, but he doesn't matter.
Fair.
His presence has a point insofar as Brian said, it gives Rocky, Adam, and Aisha a little bit of a grounding as to what they could lose if they give in to Zed. But more importantly, it gives us something that we'll, I think we're going to discuss in your next question.
Yes.
So I'll reserve the rest of my rambling for that.
So as Ben alluded, the next question, from chasing after Jacob when his stroller was going downhill to taking care of him when Mr. Anderson is kidnapped by Goldar, how do you feel this was for character development for Bulk and Skull?
Ben, do you want to continue your
point? I genuinely believe this is the single biggest moment in Bulk and Skull's journey. It is the apex of their trip up the hill. It's where they reach the tipping point. And at this point, everything is downhill to in the countdown destruction finale of In Space, where they help save the world. They have the happy ending and are never heard from again.
I will say that I agree with Ben that this is a really big moment for two reasons. Yes, it's their ultimate journey and Buck and Skull as heroes and things like that. But first should be note, they abandoned everything that they're doing to chase after the... So forget finding out who the Power Rangers are, forget everything else. They're going to go chase after this baby and the stroller, number one.
Bulk gives up food.
Bulk does give up food for this. Number two, they stay with the baby. And three, poor Bulk sacrifices his bandana.
No, he took Skull's bandana.
Whose ever bandana it was sacrificed for a noble cause. But there's another point to this. There's a moment that I caught that I thought was, first of all, asininely stupid on the part of the writers, but serves a point. They're in the park and two girls walk by and laugh at them for hanging out with a baby. First of all, I hope these women never have children. But second of all, Bulk and Skull are not in any way perturbed or annoyed. They're actually kind of annoyed by them. Like, we don't care. And they stay with the baby. They don't try to find somebody to take care of the baby. They don't try to go to the police, which maybe they should have. But I guess they sort of, it's a fair assumption, I guess, at this point, that Power Rangers will save the day, or maybe they thought Mr. Anderson would come back, or whatever their plan was, they had full intentions of doing right by this baby, regardless of what anybody else around them said.
And I completely agree with you on all those points. Now, I will say at the very beginning, what confused me a little bit was Skull laughing at the baby going downhill, and then Bulk being the one to be like, yo, hold up, what's going on? We need to go chase that thing. And then Skull finally going, oh, right. So I feel like that might have just been Skull having a moment of like, oh, yeah, this is a moment for comedy, right? And Bulk's like, no, it isn't. But I completely agree that it shows that, like, at the very least, Bulk is responsible and is capable of, you know, stepping in when he needs to.
Much of Bulk and Skull's character is about misfortune. And laughing at misfortune, be it their own people laughing at their misfortune or them laughing at other people's misfortune.
Right.
It's kind of their default state, right? Which is why this episode is so important, because that's no longer their default state.
Right.
And there's a moment. Sorry, carry on, Brian.
I was just going to say, yeah, this is a moment where they finally, like, they really step in and step up. So
there's actually a moment that absolutely hit me right in the stomach. When Aisha and Kim finally catch the child, right? And Bulk and Skull catch up with them. And like Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, and Tommy, and Kim, and Billy are all like, yeah, good job. Well done. We worked together to save the day. And none of them acknowledge Bulk and Skull. Bulk and Skull just stood there like,
yeah, it's like they weren't chasing after Jacob at all. Except they were.
I mean, let's be real. Can Tommy see anything past his own ego?
There is quite a nice moment, though. It is quite a nice moment that it ends up with Bulk, Skull, Kim, Tommy, Billy, Aisha, Adam, and Rocky all sat at the same table. It's a really nice little thing, right? And there's no animosity between them. They're all just sat there and they're all just okay. The baby's okay, right?
Yep.
The fact that the stroller chase is completely ridiculous, we'll get to later. But it's just the fact that Bulk and Skull don't get acknowledged. And I think this is the start of that. There's a moment later on where like Kim and Skull at the prom, right? Which I think that's in season 3. But the point being, this is the start of that journey. This episode is, it changes the status quo in so many ways. Like it introduces what will be the three new Rangers. It lets Bulk and Skull advance on their own personal journeys. And it's just really important.
I agree.
So with that, let's stick to Bulk and Skull and the stroller. Ben, I need a "That's Not How Science Works" out of you because
it was coming.
Because okay. let's be brutally honest, that stroller chase scene, that is
not how science works. The moment that thing hit grass, it would have stopped moving,
and probably flipped over too.
Yeah.
Like, this is the, like, was that stroller, did it have, like, a rocket pack or something? Because, like, see, my issue is not the fact with the stroller rolling and getting stuck. It's the fact that it takes the three kids on rollerblades forever to reach it.
Well, they're going through the grass. You can't rollerblade on grass, right?
I have. It's really hard to do.
Okay, so... Both counts then, right? The stroller shouldn't have kept rolling and they should have been able to catch up with it in 30 seconds.
There's no way that a stroller wheel has bearings that good that it keeps rolling like that. There's none. Like, it must have been on, like, at that point I was like, is this like a roller coaster ride? Like, it's literally on rails and it just keeps moving forward. There's got to be something propelling
but
this
not
thing.
Only that, but you also have moments where it goes through construction guys and none of the construction guys
they just get out
it.
Of the way.
They
yeah.
just get out of the way. But then also
it's going, or something.
But then also as it's going down the hill, it goes past this couple who don't right? even pay attention to this thing. They're worried about, like, I think the woman's eating a sandwich or something, and the they other guy like, might be asleep or something. It's like,
I think the guy's like scratching
it's like
himself.
The parting, it's like the parting of the Red Sea. They just sort of break apart as fast as they can. Like, oh my God, a baby stroller. What's it going to do?
It also perfectly tracks to curved surfaces. Like, it goes round corners.
Can you imagine if this whole sequence had been animated, though?
No. Could you imagine if, like, you end up finding out that Jacob had like a steering wheel in there? He's driving.
I will say this: the shots from inside the stroller with just the two little shoes sticking up into the shot were great. They were so good.
But it was like that. I mean, yeah, it's a good way to introduce Aisha, Rocky, and Adam, but. There was so much cheese to that. It's not even...
I literally have a note that says, yes, the infamous 4-minute long stroller chase.
Yeah, I have it as the world's first nonstop stroller coaster.
Stroller coaster. Also, there's the two people carrying the banner for the ninja competition across the street, unfurled, when it's made of paper? Why not just roll it up?
I think we've pointed this out a number of times that Angel Grove is not populated with the most intelligent people.
And not like that, but like with the poster, why didn't they try to stop him? You know, like you had a group of people there. It's like,
knowing this,
like, what the peaceful guy.
Knowing this entire sequence, the stroller would have just like sort of straight through the paper.
It was just what the.
So what did everyone think about Goldar's wooden snake?
I wonder what antique shop they bought that from.
Sasha's just dying.
Just out of interest, are we not doing phrasing anymore?
Oh my god, Lana Phrasing.
But in all seriousness.
Yuck, yuck.
Sasha's just dying over there.
It's just one of those things, right? Like, check it out, I've got a wooden snake. And you're like, why not just get a real one?
But wait, it will turn into a real one in 1 hour.
No, but I mean, like, the point being, like, why not just have a real one? Why start with the wooden one?
Yeah, like...
For the same reason that in Lightspeed Rescue, what's his name? The Sixth Ranger had a snake tattoo that had to move up his back until he bit him for however many episodes.
Oh, because they had to try and make him interesting somehow?
Well, I think you just had to drag out the plot. But my issue with the snake is in the fact that they So, Ben, I think this will be another... That's not how science works, but... So, Trini, air quotes, blasts the chains, they vanish, right? Yeah. Kimberly blasts something else and it vanished. But Billy had to physically fight the snake. He couldn't just like toss it aside and shoot it.
Yeah, there's absolutely no like hidden undertone. There's absolutely no hidden undertones there. None at all.
I don't get it. I was so confused why he didn't just shoot the snake.
Because he needed Tommy to come in and save the day and eat the snake across the caves just so
but he
Billy can blast it.
Kim did.
No. Yeah, but Tommy's exactly. The one who grabbed the snake off of Billy and threw it. Yeah, and then Kim was the one who shot the snake.
Also, small point out of when they're doing that, they had this big trepidation about removing Billy's helmet. They're going to reveal who their identity is. They literally just called each other Tommy, Kimberly, and Billy right in front of them.
Hashtag like, secret identities are a joke.
Yeah, but but here's the thing though. I think for something like that, like it's more so with them saying Billy's name, it was more out of concern for Billy. For
the point is, they still said their names. Yeah. So why are they then concerned about revealing who they are?
It's Maybe. Not like those are very like it's not like their names are super unique either. But Brian, you were trying to say something earlier.
Oh no, it's fine. It's fine. Continue. I'll get to it in a second.
Okay, it's just like it was weird. But what the part that I found weird was like they removed Billy's helmet. They're like, oh my god, it's Billy, and they're like, well, no point in trying to hide the rest of our secret identities at this point. Yoink. Like, you could have at least, like, you could have covered it up and said, like, oh, Billy's a ranger. Who are these other people? And Billy's like, oh, I can't tell you. But then it turns into a whole thing.
I mean, a few episodes later, they just become Power Rangers anyways, so.
Yeah. No. But the point being, they should have at least. It's the same thing that we talked about when we recorded White Light, right? At least try and do the narrative properly.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't do the Tommy return very well because they rushed it. And the same thing here.
I feel like here with the way they introduced Rocky, Adam, and Aisha, and also I just put two and two together while watching this. It's like, oh, they're ninjas. And then like season three, they become ninjas as well. So I was like, that's cool.
I've got some notes about that as well.
which I'm not certain if Cactus Ranger was filming at that point, but we'll get into that. But like, just given the nature of what was going on behind the scenes, it's like they had to introduce some new people somehow, you know? And I don't know. I think they did an okay-ish job with this, but again, there's so much laughable stuff in these episodes. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, it is. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, and the piggyback off that point with the whole behind the scenes stuff, it's like you knew at that point, well, at least behind the scenes wise, you knew at that point that Austin St. John, Tui Trang, and Walter Jones were going to be gone in a matter of episodes. So they had to get these new characters in. They had to at least start doing some developing a little bit with these characters and getting them meshing with some of the others, you know, so it was imperative that they had to get it going, and they had to get it going sooner rather than later at that at this point.
Right.
And Sasha?
Yeah. I was going to say it establishes the three most important things. Balkan's Skull's character development, which was probably unintentional to some extent, the ninja concept, and the three new rangers. Everything else is just stretching it out. Although I will say the whole oath thing at the end was so cheesy. I thought my eyeballs were going to fall out of my head. I was rolling them so hard. Like, it was just so cringy. Like, you could have just, I don't know, like, at this point, Billy could have built a device that wiped their memories, but point being that, like, okay, you take them to the command center, and they literally just swore on Zordon or Alpha or the universe or whatever that they protect the secret. Okay, fine. Why after that do you have to have them recite this whole oath shtick?
Because it's the Boy Scouts.
It's just, it was so cringy. I was just like, why?
And my question is, too, with that, like, obviously they take the oath, but then, like, why isn't Zordon cross with Billy and Tommy and Kim? Like, he never once is just like, guys, what the F? Like, what did you do? Like, you broke the rules or whatever, you know, you revealed your identities, like, so I don't know, like, they never go into that. But
I will say, you say that, but it has been shown up to this point that Zordon does have the best intentions for the health of his Rangers, because several times he's been like, look, if you ever want out, just say so.
Right.
So he's got the best intentions when it comes to the, and if they were like, look, dude, it was that or Billy was gonna die, he'd been like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, at least
that's the way that his character's been established to me so far. So
and when you look at that scenario, it's like, you, like, Kim and Tommy wanted to make sure that Billy did not get bitten by that snake. Like, there was that general concern.
And there's also a whole bunch of smoke on that floor that, like, he could have, I don't know how much that helmet would have helped.
Yeah, so, you know, and they just got kind of caught in a weird situation, so.
Can we also point out that that snake was a boa constrictor and doesn't bite people?
Mm. Yeah, it kind of strangles people.
Oh, she's a beaut.
Like, if the snake had wrapped itself around Billy, that would have at least made a little bit more sense, but it was just sort of like, here's the snake head, and then here's, like, the at his neck, and then everything else is sort of like in the front. It's like, it's just, it didn't quite make sense, but, you know, it's still a kid show, and we talked about how the writing was not the best in the early seasons.
And not that it, like, adds or, you know, takes away from the story at all, but just watching, you know, David Yost wrestle around with the rubber snake for a while was hilarious. Because it was very obviously a rubber snake by the time that they got to that point of recording, but that's neither here nor there.
Any more questions, Mike?
I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head.
Off the power dome.
Shouldn't we talk about Adam, Rocky,
and Aisha? I was actually just about to say that. Like, obviously we all know who Ben loves the most.
So it's not about loving. It's about the fact that Adam is vastly overlooked compared to one Mr. Thomas Oliver.
Yeah. But one thing I will say is this. This is the first time we meet these three. This is the first impression of these three. When you look at each one individually, you know, how do you feel they made on their first impression? Did they make a good impression on that first impression right here? Or did it have to take a few episodes to kind of warm up to these three? Just to add in,
I will say they are memorable because, well, I will say this. Rocky, I think, comes off as the weakest of the three.
Which isn't going to change until he leaves.
That's sad. And I will, like, Aisha comes off as very nice, and she picks locks. Like, that's a really valuable skill to have.
Which she never has again.
Yeah, well, it's Power Rangers. It's by the they get whatever they need for the purpose of plot convenience for that episode. And we do see that Adam comes off as kind of like the leader of their quote unquote little group. And he seems, you know, we do see them fighting, so we do see them as capable fighters and being able to take on the putties and things like that. Beyond that, I wish they weren't chained up the entire episode. Like, that way they could have, like, moved around a little bit more and done a little bit more. But they care about people. They have that totally not teenagers with attitude thing.
Brian?
Back in the day, I definitely felt like, wait, who are these guys and where are the guys that I like? But, you know, anytime that you're introducing new characters, especially ones that are taking over from established main leads, it takes a while to adjust, takes a while to get to know who they are. And, you know, you just have to spend time with them and get to know who they are. It doesn't matter if it's like a new friend or a character like this. I will agree, Rocky is probably the weakest of the bunch. I really like Aisha, and as much as I like Adam, I think out of the bunch, I think Aisha's got like a lot of personality to her as well. I think that they absolutely established, and maybe even not so much with just like their personalities or like even their actors in these episodes, but just like the way that they can fight, like it's just like, oh, okay, cool. These guys are, you know, probably going to be valuable down the road, right? So I don't know.
So just to put this in perspective right here real quick, after Ninja Encounter, our next two episodes is Global Proportions and Zed Waves, which Brian, you and I will be taking care of in the next episode.
Indeed.
And then it goes right to Power Transfer.
It's one big 8-episode arc, basically.
Yeah.
It's one episode. It's one arc. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
As for the crew, I know Brian says Aisha has a lot of personality to her. Do yourself a favor, Brian. Never watch the episode where there's smoke, there's fire. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it, Brian. Sorry,
as you say that because we recorded that one a couple days ago.
They were definitely pushing Aisha to the forefront. She had the most lines of the three. They definitely wanted to put the focus on her. She was the one that was the most active of the three of them. She's the one that saves Jacob. She's the one picking the lock. She's the one that when the snake transforms, she's like, it better not mess with me. They were definitely putting a lot of focus on Aisha.
I also noticed, and you and I talked about this when we actually recorded the previous episode where like where there's smoke, there's fire and stuff like that. One of the things that we've noticed is that like
which comes after this,
because order. We record out of order. But yeah. I noticed, thinking about it now, one of the things that they play off of with Adam moving forward, because they, as we learn after power transfer, they do a 3 episodes focusing on Adam. And this one also kind of shows a little bit of that confidence issue that they really played off a little later on Adam. And they actually did play a little bit of that. And thinking about it on a continuity wise, as we get later on into those episodes, it actually, maybe they're planting those seeds a little bit more for Adam.
Long term, Adam's the only one of these three that actually has an arc.
Yeah.
Everything else with Rocky and Aisha either comes out of nowhere, disappears in a single episode, or isn't really an arc, just arrives and is.
And he's also the one that is the ranger the longest out of all
there
of
is
them.
That, but I mean, like, even within season 2 itself, or season 3, right? Rocky is the same all the way through. I love, Rocky's got a place on the team. He's the, I'm going to run up and hit it really hard guy, right? That's Rocky's role, right? Aisha's only real character development over the course of the 2 seasons is that we end up finding out that she likes to work with animals. That's her only real character development.
Fair enough.
Adam, on the other hand, has things like self-confidence issues to deal with. Not thinking he's as good as the other Rangers, not knowing thinking he belongs with the other Rangers. He has arcs that pay out long-term, and they actually change who he is at the end of the arc. And he's the only one of the three that actually goes through that at any point.
And looking at it, you can kind of see those seeds, even though Aisha got more of like the lines and stuff like that, you could see the seeds being planted for Adam here.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm going to get laughed at for this, but the first appearance of Adam in episode 1 is 6 seconds in. This is an appropriately short amount of time. The reason I bring this up is because your first appearance of Adam in episode 2 is 11 minutes and 12 seconds into the episode. You don't see Rocky or Adam or Rocky or Adam for 11 or 12 minutes. You see Aisha 3 times in that time because she's picking the lock and she's interacting with Mr. Anderson. And in part 3, you see them within 1 minute and 13 seconds, which should be shorter. But the point being, that's just underlining how much extra screen time Aisha had over the other two. It's also painfully clear in the ninjutsu competition that it's not the three of them in the ninja outfits, because they fight completely differently. Like, they don't even use the same move set. Like, it's like, And I'm pretty sure Aisha was a bloke in that, the person that was supposed to be Aisha in the ninja competition. I'm pretty sure it was a bloke. Much like in season 1, Trini, the Sentai for Yellow was a man, right? First impressions were definitely the not to use. How do I explain? Not to overly stereotype, right? But it was quite clear that Rocky was the jock, Aisha was the girl, and Adam was the thoughtful one of the three, right? It was like they were drawing direct parallels. Like Rocky was Tommy, Aisha was Kim, Billy, Adam was the Billy, right? It's like they were drawing direct parallels. And when they realized, oh, wait, if we keep doing that, we'll have two of the same Ranger. Like they then subtly tried to change certain personalities when, but.
Remember when girl was a character trait?
Hey man.
As I
said many times in season one, casual 90s sexism.
Hey, there it is. But no, that's a good point, and it's a fair assessment that and you know, they're going to be a little bit plain and they're going to be a little bit basic because this is our first introduction. And like, remember the first episode of Mighty Morphin?
We
try not to, but it was also very like the music guy, the Tai Chi girl, the like, she's not a
buff karate guy.
Girl, the karate guy,
Gymnastics.
Right? I almost said ballet because it's all the pink. It's distracting.
No, that's Cat. That's next season.
I'm kidding. yeah, so.
No, the romance between Tommy and Kim was actually believable.
Shots fired. Yeah, don't care. I like thinking Tommy actually ended up divorcing Kat and ended up alone.
I still maintain he should have ended up with Elsa from Dino Thunder, but
there you go. So like as we will see further into the episodes, into the seasons, these characters will for the most part grow, they'll develop, and we might come to see them in a different light. So
but yeah, we're not expecting big things from them. This is their first appearances on screen, but
it's interesting because later on when we get introduced to a lot of the Rangers in later seasons, there is this kind of idea of like, okay, we need to establish their characters, their personalities, who they are, what the premise is. And I think that for the most part it works out well because you can tell like this is a season that's gonna have bad acting. This is a season where, you know, hopefully they'll, you know, maybe they started off a little bit plain and then they'll develop, or, oh, I really don't like this character in this introduction. And by the end of the series, you like them. So like first impressions and Power Rangers are not always accurate, but sometimes they are.
Yeah.
Then there's Gosei.
We already trashed Gosei in our mentorship, battle of the mentors. But the mentors of our discontent. Let's let him lie in obscurity until we get to the season that shall not be named.
It's gonna be a while.
All right. So
yeah, well.
Any other notes?
I've got a few. The fight that happens when Goldar is trying to kidnap Rocky, Adam, and Aisha. The part where Tommy, Billy, and Kim are fighting putties is in the middle of nowhere. Like there's just like tundra in the background, and the parking lot in the tundra, and there's like a camper van in the background, and I'm like, so Ernie's juice bar is in the middle of nowhere, like. But then you cut to another angle, and there's like a business park in the background.
Awkwardly shot shots. I actually have a different note. Two things. I don't know if I don't know why I didn't notice this in white light, but in Ninja Encounter, you can actually see the Japanese kanji behind Tommy when he's in the Tiger Zord.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, but so I thought it was kind of obviously that's Sentai footage, but it was kind of neat actually. Because if I was a kid watching that, I'd be like, what is that in the back and what is it doing there? But there is one. So Zordon actually does stuff here. Like, it's not just about the Rangers taking the oath. He's like, okay, I need you guys over here to do this. You guys will go over here. And, like, we know why, like, behind the scenes why that's happening. But I think it does help to sort of put Zordon in a position where he's not just a floating head in a tube. He's at least, like, strategizing and working out what is the most, like, who are the most...
But it's bad strategy.
Well, yeah, but I didn't say it was a good plan. But we've also talked a number of times about the fact that, like, Zordon knows things he's not supposed to. Like, we see the viewing globe, right? But, like, where does the viewing globe get its feed from? Is there like a bunch of, like, cockroaches or something roaming around Angel Grove with, like, little cameras on their heads or something? Like, what is this?
Because we know they have sensors.
Okay, so does he tap into their sensors?
I don't care.
My point being is, how does Zordon know about the serpent and what it will do? Does he just, like, know everything Goldar and Zed have in their shed up on the moon?
Well, I'm presuming that a lot of these are the tricks they used in previous battles. Because Zordon and Zed and Zordon and Rita have fought before.
I guess, but it's something... Like, I can buy that explanation. It's just not something that is ever explained in canon. We just kind of believe that Zordon is this, like, conveniently omnipotent floating head in a tube.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am totally backfilling with my own brain there, but...
Oh, wait. Other question. They mentioned that, like, at some point they were trying to teleport Zach and Trini back and Jason to the command center, but then they're like, well, we can't bring them back to the command center without the others, and we're never given an explanation why. Well, they're
frozen.
Right! So
that was kind of weird.
But it's not like Zordon and Alpha had never teleported the Rangers by themselves before. So, like, why couldn't they just teleport? Because they do end up teleporting them in later, but you needed everybody to be gathered together for
it? Maybe because they were frozen. They're the way to communicate with them was frozen.
That so they or maybe
right, somebody but, hold on to them to do the teleportation.
But does being sorry.
No, go ahead.
Does being frozen mess with your connection to the morphing grid or something? Like, I don't know. Like,
well, because no, that's a good point, Brian. Because the issue isn't that we know they're frozen. Right, so obviously they can't communicate with them, but the Ranger, before Billy created the communicators, Zordon would just, like, teleport them in. Zordon managed to kidnap 5 children initially, right?
Like, during an earthquake.
During an earthquake. So you tell me this moron can't figure out how to teleport 3 frozen teenagers in spandex?
I mean,
that he created!
That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
It was also, just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, I loved just, I don't know. I don't know if, like, Saban is just a really petty man or whatever, but at the very beginning of episode 3, it's like, literally because of the nature of them being frozen, the black, red, and yellow Rangers are just mannequins just standing in. And I was like, ooh, that hurts a little.
Well, yeah. According to everything I've read, Austin St. John, Toy Trang, and Walt Jones had already been fired at this point. Everything from this point on was stock footage of them out of
yeah.
And just ADR'd in.
Yeah. So badly. They weren't there to put the costumes on.
Well, true, but in other shots they so I don't know if this was a thing in the 90s, but for some of the footage, they do have other people in the spandex suits being the Rangers that are not the initial actors. It's not like you couldn't have found 3 extras to put on the suits and stand there.
You would have had to have paid them.
Yeah, would you have, though?
And Saban strikes again.
Well, being how Power Rangers is a non-union show.
To this day, still.
Yeah.
Not to sidetrack, but are they still non-union under Hasbro?
Yep.
Oof.
So here's the thing. The TV shows are non-union, but when they make the movies, those are union.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Well, when they make a decent movie, we'll talk.
Yeah, there it is.
But anyways, so, any other tidbits, notes?
Just to play off what Sasha was saying earlier about Zordon ordering everyone around, being like, I need you over here, I need you over here, I need you over here. Why couldn't Kim and Tommy go save Rocky, Adam, and Aisha while Billy was unfreezing the other three?
Yeah, that's a valid point. I have that too.
That was the biggest point. That was the biggest gripe I had with these episodes.
And like,
what were Kim and Tommy doing? Standing around and looking pretty?
Maybe out of the closet? I don't know.
One of them was. The other one's Tommy.
But the other thing is that, like, what was it in my notes for part three? Literally, the beginning of the episode is Zordon hounding on Billy to finish the device to unfreeze.
Like, are you done with it? Yes. Like, dude, I just got it started. Well, you better finish it. It's like, oh, dude, all right. Like, and I guess I was out of the room when that happened. But like,
just asking someone if they're finished yet doesn't make science quicker. That's not how it works.
Wait, that's not how that works.
That's not how science works.
And also, like, wasn't there a moment where Billy's like, the device is finished, but I need more power to charge it? And Zordon's like, well, this is all you're going to get. Like, well, then it's not going to work.
Well, then I guess we're boned.
Well, it was nice knowing y'all, but...
See ya.
Between all three episodes, which total about 45 minutes of screen time between the three of them, once you take out introduction, the opening and closing credits and the recaps, right? There was over 7 minutes of Zord summoning and combining footage.
Yep.
I mean, I feel like if you're not... I don't know, like, Power Rangers love to do that to pad out their episodes, but it does get to a point where you're just like, right.
And I whenever I'm reviewing my episode solo, I say, and they're here to pad out the runtime, right? But, like, it just got, it's, and they sometimes have slightly shorter versions of the Megazord, the TMZ, as Mike calls it. The Thunder Megazord morphing sequence where you don't get to see the Red Dragon transform into Warrior Mode. They have a shorter version of that, which cuts off about 15 or so seconds. But they played the full thing both times, in the three-parter.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Also, point out that when they defeat Hatchasaurus for the second time, they still don't break the Cardiotron, but he stays down.
By the power of plot convenience!
And I just want to stop talking about this, because can it be next season already? We've still got more than half a season to go.
Yep. I feel like at this point so far, this is less of a podcast show of four nerds talking about Power Rangers, and it's like a Power Rangers support group. It's like, and how did this episode make you feel? This episode hurt my soul. We understand.
The sad part was, and he stopped doing it this season, but Mike used to read out the IMDb ratings on episodes, and I would be, no, that's a lie. Because, like, some of them would be getting, like, nines. And I'm like, how?
Nostalgia.
You're looking it up, aren't you, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
No, don't do it! It's pure nostalgia, because people remember the way these episodes made them feel as kids. And that's how they rate it. Instead of, like, going back, watching the episode, and then rating it. Because if that were the case, these scores would be vastly different.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see here. Mighty Morphin episode guide. Come on.
I feel like we should have some kind of like epic drum roll in the back of like an execute, like, you while know,
Mike's
the...
while Mike's looking this up.
All right.
Produces it advanced current characters. It allowed us to see different sides of characters that we've not seen before. And after some 80 or nearly 90 episodes of Power Rangers, it was very needed, right? I'll also go on to say I actually end up preferring Rocky, Adam, and Aisha to Zach, Trini, and Jason. Maybe because, especially with Zach and Adam, because we spend more time with Adam than we do with Zach. But Jason, for me, Jason and Rocky are the same person. They are.
I feel that Jason, though, is a little higher up character developed wise than Rocky is.
Really?
Well, because Jason,
give me one actual character arc Jason went through in Mighty Morphin.
I don't think it's necessarily about character arcs. I think it's mostly based off the fact that Jason was the leader, so he kind of had to take on that role of sort of responsibility and being the one that like the other Rangers could count on. So
right, but I'm not talking about
when you look at the stuff with Tommy, like when Tommy lost the powers the first time and then Tommy lost the powers the second time.
Right.
Jason really took that to heart.
He did.
And I'm not saying
otherwise.
And like, but where do you see that really with Rocky in those type of regards? Like Rocky was like, oh, like you and I did Rocky just like to have fun. Yeah. So it's like, but like,
was Rocky ever put in that position?
I'd have to watch more episodes again because it's been a while and I gotta refresh my memory.
I can tell you now, he wasn't. He was never put in a position where he had to choose between his teammates, right? And the stuff that you're talking about with Jason, right? They didn't change his character. He would have made the same choice before and after. He regretted it that he had to make the choice. And he regretted that he failed. But it didn't change his character.
But I got the ratings. Okay.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Part one is 6.6. Part two and part three is 7.1.
Why?
Why? I mean, I oh God.
But remember, part one got the lower of the three, even though technically two and three got the same.
Maybe everybody got so distracted by the baby carriage.
By the stroller, yeah. But to go back to what I was saying, right? Like, Aisha definitely undergoes a bit more character development than Trini did. Because Trini ends up just kind of being a cipher for Billy, really. And as I've expressed previously, she's just there to be everything the others aren't. She's kind of the we need someone to be able to do a thing. Oh, quick, put it on Trini, right? Like, And Zach, I feel if he'd stuck around more, we'd have got a bit more development on him. But his development was like, did he ever go out with Angela? Like,
here's the thing. The initial five, I think the writers made them too perfect. So they were sort of trying to figure out, like, what do we do with them now? Like, oh, we'll make Zach awkward with girls. We'll even more... like up the ante with Billy being a nerd or whatever it was. So I think they sort of didn't know how to make character development stories for perfect characters, quote unquote.
Yeah, and that's which, what I'm like, saying. Sorry, carry on.
Well, I was going to just add that like had they, what they could have done is like break them down a little bit, have them fail, but that's maybe too, failure is maybe too dark for a kid's show in the 90s. But I think maybe some of the mistakes that they made, they realized like, oh, we need to establish them with something other than attributes of positivity.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't like execute it perfectly, but at least I think they tried.
And that's what I'm saying is I think that's why Rocky, Adam, and Aisha end up being more successful characters. It's because they don't start off perfect from the beginning.
And not even just successful, but also, I think, but also memorable.
I would disagree on memorable. You ask the average person on the street who's the Red Mighty Morphin Ranger.
Well, that's because the average person didn't watch past the original Mighty Morphin Run. But
like, people are still going to say they prefer Jason over Rocky.
I mean, I would personally still say that, but that's just what I'm saying, nostalgia talking. Like,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm going to continue running the joke about Adam being the greatest Power Ranger of all time, but I'm not wrong when I say that he should be in the discussion. Like, if Tommy's in the conversation, then so's Adam, right? Like, if not more so, but that's for a whole nother column.
I can't wait to read it.
Anyway, let's wrap up.
Let's wrap. So this time we'll change it up. Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Yeah, it's me, your boy, Ben Taylor, the man who shot Liberty Valance. Again, I'm referencing that 60s movie and I'm sticking with it. You can find me on the old Twitter machines over at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find this show on the Twitter machines at
VFTG_PR.
You can find my various and sundry, I don't want to say treaties, but word vomit about various seasons that I've watched and where I've written them down over at
txhdhockey.com/bens-journey.
Can't promise you which one's going to be coming out around the time of this because I write them ahead of time and they're recorded ahead of time. These are recorded ahead of time, so we are at the whim of time. Someone called Time Force. And you can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV. All right, Brian.
You can find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek, and you can also catch me at castwavestudios.com. Friend of the show. We've been friends of the show for God knows how long now. And we're always putting out new content, or at least trying to come out with new content. And check us out there.
Sasha.
Mine is the shortest and the sweetest. It is geekgirl101.tumblr.com. For all of my fun shenanigans, I annoy people, I talk comic books. You can find all of the cool exclusive stuff that does not make it onto my Twitter because I am lazy and I'm in grad school and I work full time and I do this. And that is Geeky Kaplan with a K for the best superhero ever, Billy Kaplan, and geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. For all of my full-length, obnoxiously despicable, very long, and very fun comic book reviews.
And obnoxious being the operative word.
And then you can find me... you can find me on Twitter at @thelindemob75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. You can find me also on txhdhockey.com doing the hockey thing. Maybe by the time this episode is aired, I might have been doing episodes on the Mighty Ducks series on Disney Plus. Who knows? Obviously for the show itself, you go to txhdhockey.com/VFTG. And with that, Ben, take us out.
It has been a long, strange journey through 100 odd episodes of Power Rangers to get to our first real change of the status quo. But what will not change is the way that I sign out of every episode by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, of course, be sure to grab your power morphers and your power coins.
And may the power protect you.
Because he's the greatest of all time.